The divisional round is in the books, and while the Kansas City Chiefs are inevitable, the Bills face a tough offseason, but can they get back to this spot next year and many years to come? The Packers let one slip away, but how can you not feel good about them going to this offseason with all these young players? And finally, the Baltimore Ravens. Do they have a weakness? Can they be stopped? All that and more coming up on the Divisional Round Recap Pod. Let's get into it. It's Monday, January 2nd. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is Scott Pianowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, man. We got a great weekend of football. The divisional round is often seen as the best week of the playoff year, other than the Super Bowl, of course. But, you know, four games. One of them was competitive for about a half. Three of them, I thought, had great finishes. A lot of back and forth in some of these games. So, yeah, the wild card round was pretty much a dud other than the Lions and Rams. But the second round, I thought, delivered, and I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, the second round absolutely delivered. Divisional weekend was electric. It was fantastic. And really, I think the last game of the proceedings really stood out. And let's start there. Let's go in reverse order of how these games played out chronologically, starting with Chiefs 27, Bills 24. I mean, Scott, Patrick Mahomes has been to the AFC Championship game now every single season. He's been a starter six straight years. I mean, the guy is just inevitable. And I know I'm not the only one to have said that. I said it last night. I'm saying it now. I know a lot of people have said it. And it just, that word feels very descriptive. It feels very accurate for this era of Kansas City Chiefs football, especially this version of the Chiefs.
Right. I mean, he also proved he could win a road playoff game. Amazingly, it was the first time he had ever played a road game in the playoffs, not counting Super Bowls. We know the Chiefs did play at Tampa Bay for one of their Super Bowls, but you know, one of the rewards of the Chiefs being so great is all the home games, and they go on the road. It's funny. I watch this game and completely, as you know, we're fantasy guys, but in the playoffs, I'm in a couple of playoff contests, but I'm not really grinding them. I'm just watching the games as a fan right. and as an analyst. And it's just refreshing to sit back and just not have to think about, okay, who am I picking up tomorrow on the waiver wire? And, you know, yeah. do I have to make a change in my flex? I love doing that for 4 months a year. It's nice to watch these games and not have to do that. So I'm watching this game, and I'm not looking at the box score at all. I didn't look at it until this morning, and it was shocking to me. I didn't realize that Mahomes averaged 9.3 yards per attempt and Josh Allen averaged 4.8. It didn't feel that way to me, and I know there's some things about the Buffalo passing game we'll have to unpack. But Mahomes goes to a difficult place to play. We know it isn't great Buffalo defense, but when you go 17 for 23 on the road, you average 9.3 yards per attempt. He had one really well-timed 24-yard run. I think the Chiefs only punted once in this game, and it could have been maybe even a little bit. The gap could have been a little bit more lopsided if not for Mecole Hardman being Mecole Hardman. But you know, the Chiefs wouldn't be the Chiefs if they didn't at some point give the ball to somebody that drives us crazy. Usually that's Kadarius Toney. Today it was Mecole Hardman, but yeah, Mahomes, man, he is he's here, and he's in the final four again, and obviously they'll be underdogs against Baltimore. But all season it's been like, what's wrong with the Chiefs? Do they have a third pitch? You know, they finally got Rashee Rice going. Kelce has been on a really bad down cycle in his age 34 season. He has a Kelce game today. This just felt like a more of an older the Chiefs that we thought we were getting at the beginning of the season. Pacheco was great, Kelce was great. Mahomes, the ball barely touched the ground. I thought Andy Reid, for the most part, had a really good game. So it's something I know Buffalo's a heartbreak story, and we'll get to them. But there's something reassuring about seeing one of the best teams in football. So, yeah, we're still one of the best teams in football.
I also find it like weirdly. I think I said a couple months ago on the podcast, and I'm sure that the Chiefs now, for most NFL fans and most people consuming the game, have probably entered their villain era by now, right? Like that they're sick of them. And I definitely get it. Like it would have been nice to see somebody different in this spot, but like, it's just what can you do? Like I almost am like struggling for words for it because Mahomes is that good. Like this team is that well built. They can do this goofy stuff. Like the Mecole Hardman thing. It's hilarious. Like everybody on planet Earth knew that they needed to throw those Mecole Hardman rushing plays, sweeps, end arounds, whatever. We all knew those needed to be thrown in the garbage, except Andy Reid and Matt Nagy, like the two people responsible for putting together the Chiefs offense. They were the only ones that disagreed with that. We saw, like, and they were punished in the most difficult way that you can be. By the way, like, that's why that rule exists, because you can't do something that stupid in that spot. You should be punished harshly in that spot for reaching out. Like, that's bad football, reaching out across the goal line, having it getting punched out like that. And I mean, for Mecole Hardman to do it, it's just, hey, when he does it, it's just as dumb as when, like, Justin Jefferson does it or something like that. Okay, so we all need to accept that this is a good rule, although we won't. It sounds like the NFL is actually going to be angling to change that rule. But that's my soapbox on that. As for the Chiefs, it was great to see, to me, Travis Kelce pop back up in this spot. You know, his brother's in the stands, jumping out of the Taylor Swift box with his shirt off, crushing beers, you know, absolutely electric stuff from Jason Kelce. I mean, you know that his, like, kind of retirement announcement was sort of like he gave a little bit of pushback on that on his podcast. I do kind of wonder if, like, is this the last run for Travis Kelce? I don't know, but it's spectacular that we get this type of entry in it in the divisional round, if that is the case. But yeah, man, it's just this Chiefs team has solved problems at every angle, every point of the season, right? Like, they were, I don't know, I definitely said a lot of, like, hey, I don't think this team has it. I don't think this team can win the Super Bowl with this problem. But right now, they're one game away from being in the Super Bowl, and they didn't feel as damning and as problematic of an issue last night as it has for most of the year.
And the one thing Kansas City did better than Buffalo actually had more first downs in this game, but Kansas City had all the chunk plays, right? There were six plays of 20 yards or better for Kansas City, and Buffalo didn't have any of them. Although Buffalo did have 27 first downs, everything was like a 7-yard gain, a 5-yard gain. And that's nice, but you know, as a long suffering Patriots fan, and nobody wants to hear that, but you know, all their drives have to be 15 plays because everything's, you know, it's nobody ever gets to the second level. Nobody ever runs behind a defense. Kansas City had been one of those offenses most of the year that they had to have the 13 play drives, but at least today they hit on some splash plays, which had been a missing pitch for them most of the season.
Yeah, exactly. I think, like, MVS pops up for 2 for 62. I mean, the first time he's made a play all year, certainly for quite a long time. Man, I think this team would be so dangerous, right, if they just had a real outside receiver. But hey, I say they could be so dangerous, but, like, what? They're going to be so dangerous that they're going to go to the Super Bowl? They might do that anyways.
Yeah. How more dangerous can they get? They're in the Final Four. Here they are.
Exactly. It's just such a well-built operation. I think Steve Spagnuolo is probably, like, the unsung hero of this Chiefs run. He's just an incredible defensive coordinator. And I think really sort of, again, talk about solving problems in real time. On that side of the ball, I think Kansas City really started to figure things out. What Buffalo was doing really well in the first half and really, like, for the most part of the first three quarters, they started kind of figuring that out late in the game. I think, you know, when we talk about this era of Chiefs football, when we look back at it, obviously we're going to talk about Mahomes. We're going to talk about Andy Reid. We're going to talk about all this stuff, Travis Kelce, and obviously Tyreek Hill's part in it. But I do think Steve Spagnuolo is probably, like, the most underrated part, like the most underrated infinity stone of this gauntlet that the Chiefs have been on. Like I said, they're going to the AFC title game. It's super impressive.
You could argue, Matt, that for the most of the Mahomes era, this is a finesse team. And I feel like the identity of this team is a physical team. It's about the defense. Look, Mahomes is obviously going to overpower your program when he's there because he's so great. And he's still great, even though he doesn't have the wide receiver help that we would like him to have. But one reason why I picked Kansas City in this game, and look, this game could have gone either way. It's not like that was like some wonderful pick or anything. But I thought what Kansas City is best at would travel, the power running of Pacheco and the defense. And not that that, again, I don't want to bury the lead. Patrick Mahomes is always going to be a factor, and he's a wonderful player. But it's just interesting that that is such a signature of this team when normally you think, oh, they almost felt like a dome team that played outside. Now they feel like a physical team that plays outside.
No, that's a great point. And when you're trying to put a dynasty together, when you're trying, this is why I keep saying it's an achievement of, obviously, Mahomes' greatness and all these guys, you know, like that, the big key parts of this team. It's a testament to them. It's a testament to great team building, too. And there's obvious issues on this roster. We talked about receiver all year long. We talked about like this run game, even though Pacheco is, I think, a pretty good back. He's not a complete back, and their run game hasn't been great at times. It has been good in the it's been really good in the playoffs. It, in my opinion, I thought Pacheco and the run game was really good last night against the Bills. But that's because the guard play hasn't consistently been there either. And again, that should be the strength of this team. But they have built so well in other areas, specifically defensively, specifically in areas, like you said, that they can put these opposing offenses in a bind and they can really grind it out and be like a physical team. I mean, even Rashee Rice is like a physical receiver. He's not a finesse-y type of receiver either. He's kind of like a grinder. He's that power slot that's going to win after the catch. He's a little bit like a souped up version of Juju Smith-Schuster, even though I think he's not been as reliable as Juju was for them last year. Again, that like one-to-one replacement there is a little bit, like I said, a souped up version. So I don't know, man, this Chiefs team is definitely a very, it's an interesting one in the catalog of Chiefs teams, but I'm with you that it's sort of been a identity shift for this team, and that's really how you build a great sustainable operation. Is you can go from the, hey, we're throwing 50 touchdowns a year, we got Tyreek Hill streaking downfield, and we got Travis Kelce doing his thing, you know, there's all these other supporting receivers kind of pop up, to now this version of Kansas City, and you're still going to where you go every single year, which is the AFC Championship game. Like, that is just great team building. Let's flip it to the other side and talk about Buffalo here. I'm curious where are you feeling about the Bills after this game? Because, I mean, I know that if you're a Bills fan, you got to just be heartbroken this morning.
I don't want to take any cheap shots here. It's a team that's been good for such a long time through a couple of different generations, a couple of different Hall of Fame quarterbacks, and I think Josh Allen is going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback. It's cruel that it comes down to missing a kick wide right. We know that's part of Buffalo's history. They lose a home game. They lose a game that again, it was a weird stat game because Allen, they didn't have any chunk plays, right? They had their longest completion was 15 yards. Their most successful part of their offense was Allen doing things with his legs. He had an 18-yard run, but nothing downfield. I don't know what to say about Stephon Diggs. He's been I've gotten to the point where I'm just taking his under every week, which has crept lower and lower, and he never threatened it. He did have one long pass that didn't go anywhere, but do they have to – I think Sean McDermott's a good coach. Maybe he's not a great coach. Did they need to kick the tires on some of the coaches available? Again, the idea that some coaches, maybe they take you to the near the plateau, but they can't get there. And then you have the other guy, you know, the whole Tony Dungy, John Gruden model that you see sometimes. We know that Dallas decided to stay with Mike McCarthy. I think that's a mistake, but that is what it is. I wonder what Buffalo, what can they do? They've been close and they've lost. Every game they've lost to Kansas City has been a stomach punch. They'll never get over that Gabe Davis game, the 13 seconds game and everything. Gabe Davis didn't play, of course, on Sunday. But what do you do when you're good, but you're not getting over the hump? And Josh Allen's on his big contract, so that limits some of the stuff you can do. You know, what's going to be better next year? You know, Kincaid should be better. Maybe James Cook will be a little bit better. But what version of Diggs are they getting? They have to ask themselves some very difficult questions. And I think it starts with McDermott.
I think this is going to be a tough offseason for Buffalo. Well, let me first say this. The whole idea that, you know, and I heard a lot of people say this last night, it's like, this was their shot. Okay, yeah, it was a good shot at it, because obviously this is seemingly, and I say seemingly with a lot of emphasis there, because the Chiefs are still going to the damn AFC Championship game. This is seemingly a weaker version of the Kansas City Chiefs. This is a good opportunity, right, to have made a run this year if you're Buffalo. But we also know that it was not a smooth season for Buffalo. It's not like they were just a set your watch by them type of team. Like, we knew we were getting from Buffalo every single week. They had to fire their offensive coordinator in the middle of the year.
They weren't guaranteed a playoff spot into the final week of the season. There was a very realistic situation where they could have missed the playoffs.
100%. Like, they weren't this, like, again, smooth sailing operation, which maybe, again, that speaks to sort of the feeling of like, this really would have been a good time to get it. But my point here is they'll get another shot at it, okay? I mean, one of the best quotes in the NFL was from Joe Burrow when he said, the window is my entire career. You know, obviously Burrow doesn't play for large stretches of this year, but like the Bills' window will be as long as Josh Allen is there. And, you know, people want to compare this rivalry to Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning didn't even go to a Super Bowl until he was in his 30s, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that game against the Bears, like, it took a long time for him to get there. And then we just remember how Peyton Manning's career ended. It was like, oh, well, yeah, he's 2-time Super Bowl winner, and you know, that's that. It's a lot of time in there when he was butting his head up against the current dynasty of the time, which was the New England Patriots. Like, only one team makes it from each conference, and only one team wins a Super Bowl every year. So I don't know what Buffalo, I don't know how they reckon with this. Like, I don't know how they get over the hump, as you said. But my point is that I think they will get another shot at it. Like, I don't want Bills fans coming out today being like, ah, this was it. This was their shot. Like, yeah, it's going to be a tough offseason. They're $43 million over the cap. They don't have a ton of easy restructures to make. I definitely think they have to ask the question about Stephon Diggs. Like, his contract is pretty much untradeable, though. Like, I don't know how they can get around that. My gut instinct on the Diggs stuff is that we will get a report here in the next 2 weeks of like, oh, he had, you know, sports hernia surgery or something like that. Like a one of those injuries that you can like grit your teeth and bear it. Like, because there's just, to me, Scott, there's no other explanation. There's no other explanation for what's going on with why he's so uninvolved for long stretches. And obviously, yeah, he should have caught the one deep pass that Josh Allen threw to him, but he mistimed the jump. Like, that was poor execution on, and it was, maybe he could have threw it a little bit farther, Josh Allen, you know, but it was a missile, right? Like, Diggs had to kind of come up for it. He kind of had to hit the brakes, but he mistimed the jump. And that's a thing that if you're an all pro, like, receiver who I think has a, you know, a legit Hall of Fame resume, like, that's a play that you don't make if you're not confident what's going on in your lower half. So that's still my, like, or the back injury that he dealt with at some point this year, there was that whole thing. So that's my gut instinct with the Diggs stuff. Although, you know, with Diggs, you never really know. Something else could be going on there. But I don't know if it is a coaching change, and it is a good time to ask this, Scott, because there's so many good coaching candidates available. But yeah, it's just, there's got to be some other pitch here that Buffalo can throw. Cause right now I do wonder if the coaching staff has taken them as far as they can go. And I don't know. I said a lot there, so I'll let you cut in here. But yeah, went all over the place, because I think that's how you got to feel about the Bills right now. It's just like so many things that we can kind of, like, so many threads to pull on right now.
So the Diggs stuff, I agree with you that we're going to probably find out that something was nagging him physically that wasn't disclosed, because his season doesn't make any sense. Okay, the first six games, he has five games over 100 yards. He's in the conversation as the best receiver in football, especially when Jefferson gets hurt. Diggs looks like the rightest of the right answers. And then he went through a phase where his yardage production was down. He was still scoring touchdowns. He finishes the season with a 10-game stretch where he scored one touchdown. He never had 10 targets in his last six games. And he didn't go. His last 100-yard game was in the middle of October. He had five of them to start the season in his first six. He's getting double-digit targets off the bus. That backed up. When something isn't working, you have to do other things. And we've seen other receivers. Shakir's been better. Dalton Kincaid looks like an interesting player. He'll be a fun guy to draft next year. So it doesn't – if Diggs was mediocre all season, I get it. But he was great. He was fantastic. Yeah. He was a right answer. If you did the right answers in fantasy football column around Thanksgiving, he would have been on that list. And now he's a wrong answer all of a sudden. It just doesn't make any sense. Guys don't lose it in the middle of a season. That's not how this thing works. So we know he's always been – receiver is the drama position, and a lot of these guys are to some degree divas. You have to have a certain nerve in you to have the guts to go over the middle and get your clock cleaned and get hit the way you do in the NFL, even with the version of the rules that we have right now. So I get that these guys have certain kinds of egos, and they can, things happen off the field, and you get those silly stories in the spring that go away. Oh, are Diggs and the Bills, are they getting along? Do they, you know, they like each other? Blah, blah. Yeah, they're fine. I'm not worried about any of that. And these guys are professionals when they play. Here's the bottom line. We want reasons that things happen. We want to be able to point to something, and it will be a little bit, not that I wish Diggs to be hurt, but it'll be a little bit satisfying if we have an explanation that something's been bothering him, because it just doesn't look like the football player that we've fallen in love with over the last few seasons. And you've obviously been at the front of that all along with all the charting data that points to him as an electric player. But still, even if he's healthy next year, it is an age 31 season. That's a dangerous age for a wide receiver. I still think I'm probably going to be out on Diggs next year, but we have to gather more information before we have anything close to a complete picture.
Yeah. And the one thing that I would point to, that again makes me think about, like, this is a potential injury situation. Is this, we, not like we've heard anything from Diggs himself, right? Like, like complaining and about not getting the football or anything like that. You know, last year, this time when, last year when they got eliminated in the divisional round, right? They were lost in the divisional round to the Bengals last year. And
snow game.
The snow game. There was the whole blow up with Diggs, like, after the game about how he stormed out of the locker room. As of right now, you know, it's very early Monday morning. We haven't heard anything like that, you know? So I wonder if that is like a, hey, yeah, I he's not involved in the game plan as much intentionally, but it does feel like something is amiss there, because in previous versions of the Buffalo Bills offense, you could count on, like, oh yeah, we're going to Diggs in, like, clutch moments. He's going to be the one that is the hammer drop in this offense. And that was just, it never happened. And Scott, it never felt like it was going to happen. That was the tough part about watching that game last night, and with the Diggs part of it specifically, because you're right, they have so many other answers offensively. I mean, Khalil Shakir, I love that guy. I think he is going to be a really, really good player. He had a great reception college profile. He didn't get onto the field as much as a rookie. I think they were sort of kind of trying to figure out what his role would be, but man, he's just like a rock solid receiver who gives him a little pop after the catch. He's just, again, a guy that he's where he's supposed to be, and he's super reliable. And that has not been the case with basically any other non-Diggs receiver in Buffalo for a long time. Kincaid looks like a hit. They were running the ball super effectively to start this game. It's just like so many things that we wanted out of the Bills offense when it was just Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs, like, we have that in this version of the Bills offense. The problem is that I think the core of it, which is Josh Allen to Stephon Diggs, something has gone awry there. Something that I think we will get more answers about, but I don't really know what to do with Buffalo. I think they're going to look very differently. I think defensively, especially, they're going to look very differently than they do right now. You know, Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer are probably not coming back to this team. Von Miller, you know, what a massive disappointment of a season he had. And that's Sean McDermott's side of the ball. I think Sean McDermott did a pretty good job, all things considered, with all the injuries that they dealt with on that side of the ball. But this Bills team is going to look very, very differently next year. I think a lot of the core fantasy players will be back. And maybe they add, I think they do need to add one more wide receiver. Like, we can't be throwing Trent Sherfield these missiles down the field and, like, just hoping he catches it. We need better answers than that. Gabe Davis is a free agent. I think they will add one more wide receiver. But other than that, I think this team is going to look pretty similar on offense. But I'm at least, you at least have my gears turning about the coaching part of this, just because, like, as of right now, Bill Belichick is still available. Mike Vrabel is still available. Like, there's a lot of guys out there that could potentially be, you know, championship caliber coaches, and this should be a championship caliber team that maybe it needs one more punch. But I don't know. At the same time, I don't come out of the season thinking that, there's like four or five things in this game I can point to that McDermott, really should be responsible for. So I don't really know how I feel about Buffalo right now.
Just as a period on the Josh Allen sentence, and by the way, his last four seasons as a fantasy quarterback 1, quarterback 2, quarterback 1, quarterback 1. But this year, specifically, more than ever, it was about the rushing touchdowns. He has 15 rushing touchdowns where he'd never had more than 9. He's basically between 7 and 9 just about every other year of his career, but he runs 15 in this year, even though they did scale back his rushing attempts a little bit. And remember, too, when they made the offensive coordinator change, it's easy to say, oh, well, they're winning now. They must have fixed the offense. Their efficiency stats were actually better with Ken Dorsey than they were with Brady. It wasn't a huge difference. But it wasn't like, oh, okay, we got Dorsey out of there. Brady fixed everything. That's not really true. It, for the most part, was pretty much a neutral thing. They did different things. The efficiency level was similar, slightly better in the Dorsey era. But the thing with Allen next year is you're going to have to say, well, no, you don't expect any quarterback to repeat a 15-touchdown season on the ground. So I guess you regress that back to 7, 8, or 9. So is the receiver room good enough to boost him that you can draft Allen where you'll need to, because he'll be a second or third round pick. I think in some leagues he might even go in the first round, depending on what your league personality is towards drafting quarterbacks. We've seen that shift, right? I mean, you know, back 5 or 10 years ago, all the smart people were waiting on quarterbacks. We wouldn't have to have a conversation like this. Just don't take them. You'll get somebody good in the 9th round, the 11th round off waivers. You'll stream it. I don't think anybody plays that way anymore, because the best of the quarterbacks, and we're going to get to another one in a second with a monster game, but the game has shaped differently. I think even the smart people are considering quarterbacks early, but for Josh Allen, you have to fill in that rushing touchdown column. That's the first thing you have to ask yourself.
And that's a great way to sort of put a bow on this game, because I think the final note from it is just like, I get it, you know, Kansas City, maybe some people are sick of it. you know, Buffalo, the bitter disappointment, and like, my God, this franchise has to deal with the wide right again. You're now like just dealing with Mahomes all the time when all you had to do was deal with Tom Brady dunking on you all the time for like 20 years. I will just say that coming out of this game, I am thankful that the quarterback play in this league right now, like between these two guys specifically, it's just such a treat to end up here and to be able, like, especially in the first half. I think Allen got a little greedy at the end of the game. Like, I mean, I'd have no problems with them taking that throw to Khalil Shakir, because I mean, he's Josh Allen. He can make that throw. Even if he passes up Diggs on the drag route that people are talking about. I mean, you could have easily just taken that and kept on moving. That would be the layup part of it. I think he got a little greedy at the end, but for the most part, this was a super clean game, high level quarterback game where these two guys were just absolutely balling out and pitching heat left and right. And that's a good time to be an NFL fan when these two guys were playing at the height of their powers and were able to look forward to that, you know, pretty much, like I said, every postseason. The Bills will be back here. I don't want to hear any of this like, oh, that was their shot. No, they'll find their way back here. Josh Allen's got a long time left in this league. Let's move on to the first game from Sunday, which was Lions 31, Bucks 23. Dan Campbell and the boys did it again. Scott, they were the favorite going into this one. This one isn't quite as like, oh man, you know, they got it over the Rams like they did last week. But hey, the Detroit Lions and Jared Goff and Amon-Ra St. Brown and Sam Laporta and like Dan Campbell, Ben Johnson. I mean, so many of these players that are just so easy to root for, they're going to the NFC Championship game, Scott. How crazy is that?
Yeah, it's crazy. We talked a lot about, I've lived in Michigan for two decades, and there's been championship teams in other sports, Stanley Cups, there's been NBA title, a couple of World Series appearances. Michigan just won the national title. Again, I said this all last week. I've never seen a team that captured the city's fascination, imagination, personality, unified everybody like this Lions team. That speaks to football as a different type of sport. It's one game a week. You can focus on it. Even if you're a casual fan, you know when the game is. They even moved the Red Wings at a hockey game. They moved because there's just no point of playing the game opposite the football game because nobody would have gone to it. But and I love hockey when I say that. But this is a classic Lions game, right? There was a big fourth down conversion, you know, punching in a touchdown late in the game with Craig Reynolds of all people. They were more the matriculate the ball down the field team in this game, where Tampa Bay had the splash plays. Tampa Bay had more yards per play, but the Detroit defense was able to make destructive plays. Those four sacks were critical. There were a couple of Baker Mayfield picks, including one at the end of the game. But man, I just fall in love with this Lions team. And I know a lot of people who don't have any ties to this area fall in love with it. I mean, every pass to Sam Laporta, I'm like saying Sammy out loud. He's just so much fun to watch. And Jahmyr Gibbs is, and look, he only had 13 touches in this game, and it felt like every one of them was a splash play. And I know that wasn't exactly true, but and maybe next year his workload will be a little bit more than that. But Jahmyr Gibbs, is it a mistake to take a running back in the first round? Is it a mistake to take a running back as early as number 12? I think they would certainly make that pick again. To get the things that they've gotten right, general manager, head coach, they got Goff at the right time. I mean, you know, Goff's never going to be the MVP of the league or on the cover of Madden, but Jared Goff's good enough. And just to get the hits of St. Brown as a late pick, Laporta as a second-round pick, Gibbs as a first-round pick, David Montgomery, who was not a big factor in this game, he was a nice addition who adds what they want him to be, the inside thumper. It's just a fun team to watch. You even got a couple of Jameson Williams plays in this game. I still don't really know who he is right now. I don't think he runs the full route tree yet, but the broadcast talked about some of the routes that he was running right before practice ended on Friday were stuff that was actually incorporated into the game plan. And so he made a couple of key catches here. And it was, man, all of Detroit was thinking, if the Packers had won on Saturday night, Detroit would have been hosting the NFC Championship game. This is crazy. But hey, look, they're in the Final Four. Obviously, they're a touchdown underdog to San Francisco, and I think even the most diehard Lions fan would have to admit that the Niners have a better team. But Detroit is not afraid of anybody. Remember, they started the season winning at Kansas City. I give them certainly more than a puncher's chance of winning in San Francisco. And even if they lose in a blowout, it doesn't matter. It's been a renaissance season for a really fun team and a team we're going to be drafting into next year. We're going to be drafting St. Brown in the first round. We're going to be drafting Gibbs early. We're going to be drafting Sammy Laporta early with the tight end one season as a rookie. That just, you know, that never happens. It's just so great to see him healthy too. He looked limited last week. He looked fully throttled in this game and had a Sam Laporta game. It's, what can I say? I'm in love with this team. I'm thrilled I get to watch him for another week.
Yeah, they're so much fun to watch. And, you know, we'll talk about the NFC Championship game at the very end of this real quickly. And I mean, I give them a puncher's chance to go into San Francisco and take down the 49ers. That's how good I feel about this offense right now. Great tweet from at My Sports Update. The Lions drafted offensive tackle Penei Sewell, wide receiver Amon-Ra St. Brown, linebacker Derek Barnes, defensive tackle Aleem McNeil, and DB Ifeatu Melifonwu in 2021. Sewell and St. Brown are all pros. Barnes had the game-winning INT. McNeil has been a cog in the middle, and Melifonwu had 1.5 sacks today. Like that, and that was just the 21 class. You look at the 22 class. You look at this group of rookies. Like, they have been a great draft and develop team, and like stick with the plan the entire time that Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell have been on the job. You know, even points this offseason, Scott, I was like, why don't they bring in a DeAndre Hopkins? Like, why don't they bring in, you know, someone to put this offense over the top? And this team is just like, nope, we're going to stick with our vision. We're going to stick with our plan. And we're going to, you know, the big C word, we're going to stick with our culture and what we're building here. And they've crushed it. I mean, they have drafted and developed these guys. Like, I mean, Sewell, especially, he was throwing some blocks left and right in this game to spring Jahmyr Gibbs on these big runs. You know, St. Brown, we know who he is. I mean, they've just gotten key contributors every step of the way. The broadcast did a good job of highlighting Sheila Ford Hamp and like how when she came in and kind of took over the top role with the team, she's like, I got to clean a lot of this stuff out. Like last year when they started 1-6, right? Or they started off very disappointing. And then, you know, she kept getting questions about Dan Campbell. Like, is his job safe? She's like, we are sticking with patience. We are sticking with the vision. And look at what the vision has brought for this Detroit Lions team. I mean, it's one of the most, I think, if you're a team that's down in the dumps, and we'll talk about, you know, another team at the very end of the show that's like was super down in the dumps, in the Houston Texans, and they're now playing on divisional round, even if they got outclassed by the Ravens. They're playing on the divisional round, but like the Lions are going to the NFC Championship game, and they couldn't have been more of a joke for the longest time of a team more downtrodden. Like, if you're a fan of a team that's super downtrodden like this, looking at the Lions as an example has to give you some level of hope that, hey, like why not us? Why can't we just hire the right GM, hire the head coach, not even like get a star quarterback in here, like get a guy that was on the scrap heap in Jared Goff and now is like one of the right answers for this team. So I don't know. It's just one of the best rebuilds I think that I've seen, at least in my time, like closely following football.
And one thing that had me nervous in this game is that a huge part of their success is the continuity and the talent on the offensive line. And they had a couple of guys get bagged up in this game. They had one guy leave the game. Ragnow was hurt, was able to come back. And I was thinking, no, tell me the offensive line doesn't all get hurt in the same game. And this is where this falls apart. And you could argue, if you have a quarterback like Goff, who's, you know, ideally a B or a B plus quarterback, he's never going to be the A. I'm okay with that. If you have the skill talent around him and you have, we've said it's a top five offensive line. This might be the best offensive line in football. As you mentioned, Sewell, in that 2021 draft, he's legitimately a star, and they have, you know, pieces. I think Ragnow was a second team all pro, and you know, to have a key in the center like that is so important. And Laporta is an old school tight end too. He's part of the offensive line also because he blocks his ass off. So yeah, they're playing another game. I'm thrilled. And the area has just gone crazy. You know, I played poker the other night and everybody's wearing Lions. Everybody's got a Lions hat, a Lions shirt, Lions wallet, whatever, you know. People were probably wearing Lions underwear. I don't know. I didn't get to know anybody that well, but and I'm fine with that. But it's a very Lions happy team. And on the flip side of it, you know, man, I have so much admiration for Baker Mayfield, man. Set us up for the Buccaneers. Let's talk about them.
Yeah, Bucs, obviously. Look, no one expected them to be in the divisional round. I definitely think they're going to look back on this and think, hey, we actually could have won this game. Mm-hmm. Todd Bowles has been great about decision making all year long, like when to go for it. I thought he got a little conservative in a couple spots in this one. You know, obviously Baker has the interception at the end, but Baker, I think he kind of left it all on the field, right? Like, mm-hmm. It just felt like to me, this is a team that they can bring back a lot of their guys too. I mean, I don't know. How are you feeling about the Bucs heading into 2024? Because I'm going to be very tempted with the next two teams we talk about to say, hey, like they'll be back here and it'll be fine. I mean, I said that kind of about the Bills, but at a different level, right? Like when you talk Packers and Texans, I'm going to be very tempted to say, hey, young team, young quarterback, like they'll get another shot at this thing. I don't know how I feel about the Bucks in that regard, just because the Baker Mayfield of it all. Like, they have to find a way to bring him back. They got to find a way to bring Antoine Winfield back. They got to find a way to bring Mike Evans back. Those are three pretty key cogs. You only have one franchise tag available. And, you know, we know Baker's been streaky, but he played really good football for Baker Mayfield for large parts of not just this game, but the entire season.
I'm thinking Mike Evans doesn't want to leave. What a monster season. He was fabulous in this game. It's just a joy to watch Mike Evans play. We've talked a lot about it. He's not a Hall of Fame candidate. He's in the Hall of Fame. I think he retired tomorrow. I would support him. And if he didn't get in, I would scream about it. Maybe he wouldn't get in right away because there's a backlog of good players. But Mike Evans put on a clinic. And we know that's a weakness of the Lions, right? You can get him downfield. We saw Nacua have a monster game. I can't wait to draft him next year. Mike Evans does go into his age 31 season, which makes us nervous, but his age 30, he was fantastic. And he's great in this game. And just showing the Mike Evans experience, run every route. He's got speed. He's obviously 6'5", very good adjusting in the air. The touchdown he caught was absolutely gorgeous. I think they got to find a way. I think Evans will stay. And I think maybe Evans might even take a hometown discount. Not that he's in any obligation to do so. He's earned his money and he should get whatever he can get. But I think Evans will stay and I think they'll find a way. If I'm Baker, why would you want to start over? He's bounced around. You know, Cleveland was up, Cleveland was down. There's one year he was on every commercial. The Browns fans would never say it, or the Browns organization would certainly never say it. But given everything that's happened to them in their quarterback room, they wish they had Baker Mayfield. At least you can always feel good about rooting for the guy. And he does leave it all on the field. Man, what a competitor. He's not the tallest quarterback, but he there's just a certain – I'd forgotten how much I enjoyed Baker Mayfield. Last year, I talked myself into maybe him having a good season for Carolina. That didn't work out. He was on the Rams for a second. I think he won one game around Christmas time. It's like, oh, good for Baker. It's like, at this point, I'm like, is he just a backup? Is he just not a guy
anymore?
He ended
the Nate Hackett experience in Denver.
Right. There you go. It's just nice that, again, Baker Mayfield, those days of him being on every commercial are gone, but he was good enough to win a division. I know it was a weak division. So what? Good enough to win a playoff game, and I get it. The Eagles were, you know, in a tailspin, but so what? And he played really well in this game. The pick was the only really bad and you know, I guess he threw two picks in this game, and those were key plays. That was a big difference because Tampa Bay had a better yards per play. I think they had more first downs in this game. So it comes down to the mistakes, the sacks. Detroit, Aaron Glenn has a defense now that they don't really stop you, but their idea is we're going to disrupt you a little bit. We'll sack you a few times. We'll take the ball away a couple of times. We know we're going to get beat on the back end sometimes, and that's probably the weakness of the team still. You know, Cam Sutton's getting picked on all the time, but I think they'll find a way to make Evans and Mayfield work. As you mentioned, you know, Winfield, obviously a Pro Bowl season for him. I think he made All-Pro also, or he should have anyway. Fabulous player.
He didn't make the Pro Bowl, and people were very upset about
it. Right, yeah, he was the snub of the Pro Bowl. That's right, that's right. And then he got some consideration for All-Pro. But Winfield had a fantastic season. But, man, you know, all year we agonized the NFC South, and somebody has to make the playoffs, and I'm sick of the Falcons, and I'm sick of the Saints, and obviously Carolina is so far away from being relevant. Tampa Bay ended up being a team that I'm sad. It got to the point where I went from – if they didn't take a team from the NFC South, if the league changed the rules, I'd be fine with it. That's where I was like 5 or 6 weeks ago to I'm going to miss the Tampa Bay Bucks. That's how much things have shifted. And that's really all about Baker Mayfield and Mike Evans.
Yeah. And I'm just curious what act two of Baker Mayfield, Dave Canales, who I think did a great job as an offensive coordinator this year. Like, how can he evolve in year two?
For sure. He'll get a lot of interviews too. Canales. Don't go to Carolina. Don't ruin your career and go to the Panthers. Let me ask you this. I talked about Diggs turning 31. Evans turns 31. Do you just have a takeaway on ages and receivers and arcs and curves and all that stuff? Where do you come down on that type of thing?
I think it's so hard, man, especially because receiver is a very different position. Like, I mean, inside the position, guys win in such different ways, and there can be ways to offset the aging curve by like moving guys into the slot. Like, obviously Larry Fitzgerald's a great example of that. Reggie Wayne did that towards the end of his career. Keenan Allen, like, even if he is not as explosive as he used to be, he doesn't have to, you know, run these big boy routes on the outside. Now, I think the Bills have at times tried to get Diggs in these advantageous slot positions, but it just hasn't really worked out this year. And then they don't really have anybody that can really truly be a coverage dictator on the outside. So it doesn't really work as well. You need other parts of the receiver room to work together to be able to pull that off. But yeah, I generally don't know when is the right time to bail on receivers. I think it's a very case by case situation. And I also think that, like, I mean, I've definitely personally seen where, like, oh, guys can look really good one year and then the next year they just don't have it anymore. I mean, Dez Bryant's one of my favorite examples of that, where, like, there was nothing about Dez's film in, you know, 2016, I believe it was, like 2016 or 2015. Like, oh, yeah, he's starting to slow down. And then, man, in 2017, it was over. It was over. I mean, you could see it watching. He was just done. I think it's really hard. And by the way, like, how Dez Bryant wins versus how Stephon Diggs wins, like, those are two very different things, even if they're both dominant perimeter receivers at their respective peaks. So I say all that to say, no, I don't, like, have a good rule with this stuff. And I think it's very hard. I think it's one of the hardest things to do in receiver analysis, which is to pinpoint what is the age cliff. And even for specific guys, like, when is it coming?
You mentioned Keenan Allen. He enters his age 32 season next year, and we'll see if he comes back to the Chargers. They have asked themselves a lot of difficult questions in this offseason. So it's if you're an age-centric fantasy drafter, it's going to be a really fascinating year because a lot of receivers are in that pocket, and then there's a lot of running backs who are in the late 20s pocket, that 28, 29, 30 range. There's a ton of them, and talented guys that you've wanted to draft who've had monster seasons in the last year or two. So there's going to be some tough choices. I find myself, the longer I play fantasy, the more I want to gravitate towards the young team. But that meant that I didn't draft a lot of Mike Evans this year, and that goes down.
This was a tough year for that. Yeah.
Big loss there. Good old. This is actually a good old guy season. I mean, Raheem Mostert has a monster season in his 30s, no less. The quote-unquote older guys had, as you would expect, they had maybe a little bit more juice and a little bit more steam collectively in the first half of the year. But Mike Evans goes down as a huge loss for me. A guy I've always loved too. I've always been heavy on Mike Evans. Most seasons this year I wasn't, and I regretted it. And then in the playoffs, I could just enjoy Mike Evans. And he didn't have the greatest game against Philadelphia. He dropped a touchdown he should have had. He did everything he could to beat Detroit, and almost did it himself.
Yeah, revenge of the old guys, the young guys not stepping up. That's Dalton Del Don's nightmare. However, Dalton Del Don can feel really good about what happened Saturday night when the 49ers
won. Is he still alive? He didn't have a heart attack in that game. I hope he did.
I don't know. I haven't checked in on him.
Yeah, I should check in on him.
We should do a wellness check.
What a game. And the Packers kicking themselves. They had this game. This was such a winnable game for them.
And we dive into Packers 49ers after this short break. And we're back. 49ers 24, Packers 21. Let's stick on the 49ers. And, oh, man, I mean, this is definitely so much like Brock Purdy, frankly, nauseating Brock Purdy discourse on both sides coming out of this game. I mean, you know, I don't know where you stand on the whole Brock Purdy thing. So actually, I'll just kick off with you there. And, like, look, 53 players play for the 49ers. I don't want to sit here and just talk about one guy. Because I actually think, like, the struggles of Brock Purdy went a little bit beyond just Brock Purdy to end the game or to start the game. And then he has the game winning drive, you know, and that's what people remember. And maybe that's what they should remember. I don't know. Where do you come down on Brock Purdy's performance in the divisional round for the 49ers?
I tweeted a little bit about this. I've always felt like I was more in on Purdy than most people, but it's just the great thing about NFL debates, and the horrible thing about them is that you can attribute credit and blame to any level you want. And we're never going to be able to take Purdy away from the fact that he has such great skill talent and an offensive designer that everybody thinks highly of. And he doesn't just have good talent around him. I mean, he has the best running back in the league, probably the best tight end in the league. Two absolutely electric receivers who complement themselves really well. And of course, losing Deebo Samuel early in this game changes the complexion of the game and changes the way we analyze it. It was a game played in the rain. Purdy threw what should have been a pick six. I don't know how the Packers dropped it. That's going back for a touchdown. So you get away with that. So if you're a negative Purdy guy, you're like, oh, you know, didn't play well. They should have lost. You know, they dropped a pick, blah, blah, blah. And if you're a positive Purdy guy, look how good he was in the fourth quarter. Look how good he was in that final drive. Look at the touchdown pass he threw to Kittle, which was an absolute dime. So this is one of these annoying things where however you felt about Purdy, you're going to have enough ammunition to continue to hold that ground. My stance has always been he's a good to very good player. Obviously, he never should have gone as late as he did in the draft. He was a 4-year starter in college. He did have some pedigree coming out of high school. It's not like he's some Cinderella story or anything like that, just where he was drafted. That's the only part of his story. I saw recently circulating a major website had a mock draft the year before Purdy got drafted, that spring, it had him going in the first round. And I saw a lot of the mock draft is stuff that didn't reflect well on the article. So I don't think they just put Purdy in there, you know, post facto. And I think it was actually legitimate. I wonder where he was projected to go before he ultimately became Mr. Irrelevant. Is Deebo Samuel just that important in this offense? That's a question we have to ask too. At the end of the day, Brock Purdy's good, man. He's never going to, it was so hard to handle his MVP case at face value because you just can't separate him from what's around him. But I don't know. I think he's a decade long answer for this team at quarterback. It says a lot that they said, okay, we got a guy here. We're just going to trade Trey Lance basically for nothing and give up on that. I'm more in the Purdy camp than I'm not. I'm not pounding the table to say he's a special talent, but I think he's good enough when the pieces around him are this good.
Yeah, absolutely. My thing with all this stuff is like, I know this is not what people want to hear, and it's probably a stupid thing to say on a reaction show. Like, well, where is our reactions to the divisional round? Like, let's have a real strong take that we come out here and like say with our chest or whatever. But like, how about we just let this play out, right? Like, because that's the thing is like, we'll get the answer on eventually. We'll get the answer on what Brock Purdy does when some of these players move on, like when Deebo Samuel moves on or George Kittle moves on or Brandon Ayuk moves on. Like, well, what contract are the 49ers going to sign Brock Purdy to? Who gives a damn? Like, we're not at that point yet. This is the guy's second season. Kind of the same thing I said earlier when people come out with, Josh Allen's actually not the Peyton Manning of this rivalry. He's really more like Phillip Rivers in the AFC hierarchy or whatever. It's like, okay, he's 27 years old. Like, he might play for 10 more years. I mean, all the shots he takes, I don't know. But, like, why don't we just let it play out? I don't often say that Aaron Rodgers has the right beat on things. In fact, I disagree with Aaron Rodgers on a lot of things. But he did one of the few good things he said on Pat McAfee this year was, like, hey, with Jordan Love specifically, who also played in this game, why don't we not, like, rush to judgment on him? Like, let's let it play out a little bit. Like, when he's at his highest highs, let's not try to crown him right away. And when he's at his lowest lows, let's not try to replace him right away. Like, let's give it some time. And I think that's where I come down with Purdy as well, which is, yeah, I mean, right now he's good enough for them to win, and he's good enough to put together a competent final drive where they win the game. But he wasn't a great player for three quarters or for large stretches of this game in bad conditions, right? Like, this, it was raining in this game. That seemed to give him some issues. We said the same stuff with Tua last week, right? Like, hey, it's not always going to be perfect conditions in the playoffs. This stuff is going to happen. You're going to have to win, you know, playing left-handed. I don't think Purdy, he's a pretty good scrambler. He's a pretty good, like, improvisational quarterback, but he doesn't, you know, throw at the outrageous arm angles of like a Mahomes or a Stafford or all these guys. Like, I don't think he's in that bucket of quarterback right now, but I think he's a really good player. I don't need to, you know, say that he's the next Joe Montana or whatever, but like, we'll get the answer to that. And I'll ask you this, Scott, like, because you're smarter than me, you've been around a little bit more than I have. You probably have more firsthand knowledge of the Brady stuff. Like, and I'm not saying that Brock Purdy's going to beat Tom Brady, but it is an easy comparison to make, or like a Kurt Warner, right? Like, these guys that were under the radar, right? Sixth round pick, undrafted free agent, came from the damn CFL, the whole thing, or whatever that European league that Kurt Warner was playing in. What was the discourse that were like? I mean, obviously we didn't have as many media entities back then, but what was the discourse like around those quarterbacks back then? Is it anything like the like nauseating back and forth with the Purdy thing? Because obviously, at different points, Brady wasn't always the key cog of the Patriots dynasty, but he became that guy over time. And that's kind of my point, is like, let's let it play out a little bit.
Well said. Other than the fact that I don't think you saying I'm smarter than you makes any sense, but I have been around longer. I was around for the Brady experience. By the way, Brock Purdy turned 24 at the end of December. He's 24 freaking years old.
Right.
And he does remind me, and I want to be very careful how I say this so it doesn't get misconstrued. Purdy reminds me of Brady in that the early part of Brock Purdy, where we're at, reminds me of the early part of Tom Brady. A late round pick, maybe he's a project. Is this guy going to be a backup? Is he good enough to be a starter? the early success the Patriots had with Brady and Belichick was Brady was on the bus. He was not driving the bus. He threw for, I think, 145 yards in that first Super Bowl win over the Rams. He had under 100 on the into the final drive. I still think he was the wrong MVP. I would have gone with Ty Law or Troy Brown. John Madden was saying they should play for overtime. Brady wasn't Brady yet. He was a system quarterback. He was a game manager, and he got better. And then the next few years, he was like, okay, he was a kind of like a down ballot MVP guy, but he wasn't the signature player of the league. He wasn't really that dynamic until the mid-2000s. Then, of course, you know, they get Moss and they broke all those records and they got Gronkowski and guys like that. But the Brady career had different segments to it, had different periods of it. And the early part of it was that this team is about defense. This team is about keeping the ball and playing field position and stuff like that. And Brady was never an MVP candidate, never somebody who would, you know, be the dominant. And he didn't have the greatest receivers. You know, Troy Brown was a good player. Julian Branch was a good player. He didn't have great receivers until the second half of his career. And then Brady became a totally different guy. So I think Brady of 2001, 2002, that guy compares similarly to Purdy. Obviously, Purdy has much better help right now on offense, but it's a case of Purdy is not asked to be the dominant guy here. They're not saying, okay, we're going to throw the ball 45, 50 times a game. You come out and shotgun and forget the running backs and all that. They don't play that way. I think that comp is very realistic. And again, the age, the advantage of having a quarterback that you know is your future, this young rookie contract, it enables you to do some things. Eventually, they will have to make a decision on his contract, and I think they would pay him. I don't know why they wouldn't unless he got hurt. But I think the early Brady, early Purdy comp is very, very accurate. It's a very clean comparison.
Right. And that's the point is, like, it's the early Brady comp. Let's see how it plays out with Brock Purdy.
Brady got a lot better. Whether how much you want to give that to the coaching staff, to Belichick, to Brady himself, you don't know. People always say, like, well, what if Brady was drafted by a bad organization? Or what if Brock Purdy was drafted by a bad organization? You know, Steve Young was on the Buccaneers and was terrible. And it wasn't Steve Young's fault. The team was awful. And then he went to the 49ers, which you think this setup is great. I mean, he went to the 49ers when they had unbelievable. They had Bill Walsh. They had Jerry Rice. Although the setup they have now is pretty freaking good, too. Every quarterback in the league would want to play for it. But the point is, Steve Young was a totally different guy, Buccaneers to 49ers. And that's because that's how much context obviously matters in the NFL. But the bottom line, the Niners, and they have some tough choices coming up. You know, we talk about guys starting to age out of fantasy relevance. I love George Kittle, very much a high contact player. He's, 30 now, I want to say, into his age 31 season next year. Probably the best tight end in the league at this point. Also, we didn't talk about with Kelsey, Kansas City's advancing. Maybe it's a conversation for a later week. I wouldn't be shocked if Travis Kelce retired, especially if they go to the Super Bowl again. Maybe he just like goes out on the high note. But the Niners have some tough choices to make. Kittle, how much longer can we draft Kittle? McCaffrey's been healthy. A lot of people didn't want to draft him. They're worried about him getting hurt. He didn't get hurt. He was great. He'll go number one next year. And then if he gets hurt, we'll have all the Ajita there. But how much do you think their struggles today or this weekend had to do with losing Debo so early? Is he the one guy an offense with monster pieces everywhere? Is he the Jenga piece?
I think CMC is probably the Jenga piece a little more so. At the same time, though, Debo is such a unique entity at wide receiver. You even saw them, like, I think Shanahan said after the game, it was a mistake that they checked into this play, but like Chris Conley was like doing a run, like a rushing play, like as if that was clearly a Debo Samuel play. And then like Chris Conley's just in the play because I mean, let me tell you what, Chris Conley, he ain't supposed to be doing Debo Samuel things, right? Like that's just not, that's just not a good comp. So I think he is a guy that is really, really difficult to replace. I mean, and people will do their splits with and without Debo. I think their three losses were all, that like three game losing streak was all when Debo Samuel wasn't involved in the picture. He is super critical to what this team does, and they're just not the same team when he's not in there. I do think Christian McCaffrey is probably the one guy that really like makes everything go, and I think defenses account for him the most, or at least he's the one who takes this offense to another level. But Debo is so central to what they do from like a pre-snap motion standpoint, from a deception standpoint, that playing without him is really difficult for sure. Let's talk Packers here, and I'm with you that it's very tempting to just say, hey, look, we can feel good about the Packers and Jordan Love. You know, he showed great signs this year. They have all these young players. You know, Matt LaFleur did a great coaching job. The defense, I think, actually quietly played really, really well in the playoffs when that was one of the most heavily criticized units to end the season, and deservedly so. All that being said, like, with all that optimism we can spin around this team, if I was a Packers fan, I'd feel pretty bummed that they were not able to close this one out. You know, I'd feel pretty tilted that we've got the Jordan Love, Brett Favre side by sides, you know, constantly in this game. So, man, I definitely think you leave this season with a bitter taste in your mouth with how this loss played out. But you got to feel good about the Packers' future with all these guys.
For sure. We talked a lot about first year of Love starting, the youngest receiver group in the league, and they're all growing up together. And what a run it was, what they did at the end of the year to storm into the playoffs, to go and really kick Dallas in the teeth and blow them out. I, you know, 48-32, but that felt like a 40-point win and cosmetically close in the final score. It just hurts because the San Francisco game was there to be won, and Love, with no warning, just played a really bad second half and made some throws that don't fit, are not congruent with the guy. This is a guy who, over a 9-game, 10-game period, had one interception. Then he throws just two awful picks. And I don't know if he realized just how much time and how much opportunity they had in that final drive. They didn't have to make. He made kind of like a fourth down and long throw when it was second down. You know, you didn't have to take that chance. You're only down a field goal. Who knows what happens if they make that earlier field goal that they missed, the 41-42 yarder. A lot of soul crushing picks, a lot of soul crushing kicks that were missed. It feels like every team that lost missed a kick. Tampa Bay had the doink that didn't go in. Obviously, Buffalo had the kick they're not going to forget. And Green Bay, if they make that field goal, they're up a touchdown late in this game. But I think we know what the Packers are. They're a team, the arrow's pointing up, Love's the right answer. That receiver room is going to grow up together. LaFleur is an excellent coach. And they have to ask themselves some tough questions on defense. The defense, for the most part, was really, really bad for the majority of the season. It played better at times. I mean, it played better at Dallas. They still allowed a million yards and a million points, a lot of that in garbage time. But the defense was good enough to win this game. But mm-hmm. I think Green Bay is a very easy unpack. It's just the receiver room and the quarterback room will grow up together. Maybe Aaron Jones is finally a player I really love, but maybe he's going to be 30 next year. That's a dangerous age for a running back. But it's just the great thing about Green Bay is that if you want to get involved in this passing game next year, you're going to have choices, right? Maybe you want Watson. Maybe you want Wicks. Maybe you want Reed. Maybe you end up with Love. Maybe you take a chance on one of their tight ends. They're going to have a lot of different choices, and you know, the coaching staff isn't going anywhere. So arrow pointed up, a team I'm excited to draft into next season.
Yeah, they got to figure something out with Aaron Jones because, you know, they cut his pay last year. He missed long stretches of time with injury. But when he's on, this offense just looks totally different, you know. So I think that's going to be a big decision point. What do we do with Jones specifically at this point in his career? And how can we get a better plan behind him than just like, you know, A.J. Dillon and Emmanuel Wilson and Patrick Taylor and all
they're going to draft a running back in the second or third round, I think.
Yeah, I think they just have to. They did that with A.J. Dillon, right? I think they just went a little bit more like complimentary. I think this one might be more like, let's add a strength to a strength there with what we get out of Aaron Jones. So they're going to be a fascinating team to track throughout the offseason. No guarantee that like, oh, you just keep building on your promise. You keep building on your momentum, right? Like there are very few Kansas Cities. There are very few San Franciscos that are just in these spots basically not every single year with San Francisco, but you're so often in these spots. You don't always build your team well, but like if you do build it right, and I think the Packers are currently building it right, you can be a competitive entity every single season. I think they have the potential to do that. Final game of the weekend, Ravens 34, Texans 10. We can talk about this one kind of in totality as opposed to going back and forth between the teams here. Because, Scott, to me, this felt like very competitive first half. All the promise that you'd want out of the Texans. And, you know, I thought they did some really good things. You know, they were heating up Lamar from a blitz perspective. They were throwing blitzes at him basically all game long. He just had all the answers. Like, this was a, hey, again, if I'm a Texans fan, I'm leaving this season with my head held high, feeling really good about the future of the team. But, man, the Ravens are just that good right now on both sides of the ball that they can, when they decide to put their foot on the gas, they can really pull away from you.
Yeah, it felt like it took a half for Baltimore to figure out what to do. And then they plugged in the amp in the second half, and they just looked so unstoppable. when Lamar has a little bit of time to throw, whether the blocking holds up or he buys a little extra time, that he's throwing to somebody who's wide open downfield. And I still, Zay Flowers moves like a slinky. That guy, he's going to be, the only thing that's ever going to hold down Zay Flowers is is he going to be in an offense that's going to pepper him with targets? Right now, that isn't the shape of this offense, but he's just a fun player to watch. What a ridiculous touchdown catch from Likely. And yeah. Jackson, he's been this is my favorite part of the NFL season, but it's like, you have to go all in or all out on guys. It's like, oh, Lamar Jackson, he's a choker in the playoffs, or Lamar Jackson, he's the best player in the league. He's going to show you. Well, Lamar Jackson wasn't great in the first half, but he looked unstoppable in the second half. And this could be go down as the signature play. This could be the year that he's going to win the second MVP. Now he has two playoff wins. They've been overdue to go to the Super Bowl on his watch. They're obviously the favorites. They've been the best team in football this year. They beat the snot out of the 49ers when they met. I mean, maybe this is the postseason where Lamar Jackson just puts the hammer down and all those tired narratives we have to listen to go away. But they looked undefendable in the second half. And to think they're still not playing with their ideal version of their offense, maybe they'll get, I think of the name of their tight end, Mark Andrews back next week. Yes. Although you get to think that Likely's going to have a role in the offense anyway.
Let's hope that's a tough thing to figure out because they do like their 11 personnel packages and stuff like that. But yeah, man, I know Odell Beckham only has like one catch for 12 yards in this game. So it's not as if like, oh man, we can't take him off the field. That will be a difficult problem for Todd Monken to solve. But I feel very good about Todd Monken solving that problem because of just the display that we saw in this game. Like that was constant evidence of problem solving in real time by the offensive coordinator in this game. So I would love to see them figure out a way to get Andrews and Likely on the field together. Cause Likely he's I don't know if he's a stud, but like, he's really damn good.
And this game played out the way the Ravens love to play, where they pound away, they pound away, they pound away. And then they hit you for a 25 yard pass play. They hit you for a chunk play. And then every once in a while you do defend them well. And Lamar says, well, I'm Lamar Jackson. I'm going to run for 20 yards. You know, what are you going to do about it? They are so difficult to match up against, and I can't wait to see them play Kansas City next week. And I'm just excited for what we have coming, man. It's Monken, right offensive coordinator, right time. Jackson takes off in the second half of the year, wins his MVP. I don't know why they didn't get a taunting flag for it, but they even gave eight carries to Dalvin Cook, you know, which I think qualifies as taunting, but maybe it doesn't. Whatever's left of Dalvin Cook these days, but I still would like to see one more receiver. I wish we could just take Odell Beckham 3, 4, 5 years ago and put him in this offense.
Yeah.
Because he's obviously not the same guy. But you know, maybe, who knows? Maybe Monken, maybe he makes Likely just more of a jumbo wide receiver. Now, we know Andrews played a lot of receiver in college too. So these guys are kind of hybrid tight ends anyway. I'm really curious to see how they mesh together because I think Likely's been too good that he's not going back to a secondary role even when Andrews is back. I think both of these guys can exist together in this offense.
Yeah, I actually think the 2024 Ravens, and look, they might win their next two games, the Ravens, right? Because I think they're good enough to win the Super Bowl this year. They're on both sides of the ball, they're fantastic. So I don't want to like get too far ahead of myself like looking towards the Ravens of next year. But like if Todd Monken's back with this team and like Zay Flowers is another year better. You know, Rashad Bateman's another year healthier. Isaiah Likely is another year in the offense. Mark Andrews is healthy, right? Like this, I think this could be just the beginning for the Ravens offense. They probably will add to the receiver room. They probably should add to the receiver room in the offseason. We'll see if they bring back Odell Beckham. I don't know, but it's a very fascinating potential.
Matt, isn't it crazy, Matt? Just look at the way the AFC has loaded up with quarterbacks. There are some good quarterbacks in the NFC. Josh Allen, whatever you think of Tua these days, Lamar Jackson, hopefully a healthy Joe Burrow next year. We'll talk about CJ Stroud in a minute, who looks like he's going to be fabulous. Mahomes, I've gone this long without mentioning Patrick Mahomes. Justin Herbert is still a really good football player. They're all in the same freaking conference, man.
I know.
It's just crazy. Houston did, as we transition to them, they got the two most important decisions you could make right. They got the head coach right. They got the quarterback right. CJ Stroud did not play great in this game. That's fine. Ravens had one thing that made the Ravens so great this year is just, they're just dominant in every phase, right? It's not just the offense. The defense had an unbelievable year. And the fact that Stroud get out of here with no sacks and no picks, I realized there was no explosive plays in the game, but at least he was avoiding trouble. He just didn't make enough connections with the receivers downfield. But Houston, man, you were so bad, down bad a couple of years ago, you know, with the Watson thing, and the coaching was a mess, and this nobody wants to come here. And you fixed it. You're ahead of schedule. This playoff season was probably 1 or 2 years down the road, and you stole that division. It wasn't the greatest division, but whatever. You stole it, and you're going to be here. I also didn't mention Anthony Richardson. What if Shane Steichen and Anthony Richardson becomes a thing? The AFC is going to be so much fun next year. But I love the Texans. They had, ahead of schedule, playoff win. Nico Collins was a monster all year, and C.J. Stroud looks like he's going to be an MVP candidate for 10 years. I think the only thing that holds him back is getting hurt.
I'm 100% with you there. You know, they might lose Bobby Slowick in this coaching cycle. Although if I'm Bobby Slowick, I'm like, I'm going to do what Ben Johnson did last year and be like, I'll take a year. Like, and now literally everybody wants to talk to Ben Johnson to the point that his entire calendar on Sunday, the entire weekend is filled with not just, oh yeah, the biggest coaching performance, biggest game of my life.
Yep.
I also have to talk to like five teams for first and second interviews.
Yeah. How many steaks can Ben Johnson eat? Right. Cause everybody's taking him out to dinner. You know, I mean, he's just,
so many people are just talking to him on Zoom. I mean, God, right. he's got to have just like strained eyeballs from number one, again, preparing a game plan and then looking into the damn Zoom all weekend long with all these interviews. But like that could easily be Bobby Slowick next year, because not only he has C.J. Stroud. I mean, as long as C.J. Stroud is good, he's going to be involved in these head coaching opportunities. And I would like to see what is the second act for Bobby Slowick, as like how do you, again, we talk about Todd Monken solving problems in real time. This another first year coordinator, but still, like, what's the second act of this Texans offense? Because by the end of it, with Tank Dell out and, you know, even like Noah Brown hurt, it's just C.J. Stroud, Nico Collins, like hopefully. But if you can take that away, they don't have a lot of counterpunches right now, because they are very insistent on trying to establish this ground game. But they could go nowhere for pretty much all season, but especially against Baltimore. You know, Devin Singletary had 22 yards on the ground. He had a long run of 16 yards. Like, I would love to see them add a real legit running back that fits the system, because clearly that's not Dameon Pierce, who's just been banished so far to the shadow realm. It's like, oh, he returns kicks. Yikes. I'd like to see them get a real running back here that fits the system, that could maybe add something there. You know, maybe you add another receiver for a depth piece. You don't need a star, because you have a star in Nico Collins. You have Tank Dell coming back. But like, I'd like to see what the second act of this offense looks like under Slowick and obviously C.J. Stroud.
Give me an idea where you think Nico Collins might go next year in drafts.
Oh, top. He should probably be a second round pick in my book.
Okay. And he's never getting past the third round. But you would push him into the second?
Yeah, I think back half of the second is probably appropriate for him, I would say.
I can see that. I mean, he's going to command a heavy target share. He'll have touchdown equity. He's tied to a plus quarterback. And I would think that Slowick would probably come back. And again, you know, Houston did what, if you want to get relevant, what do? Raid the good teams, right? So they raided the 49ers for their head coach and their coordinator, which was really smart to do. But yeah, I think he'll probably be like a popular wheel pick. Like, somebody's going to start their draft with Christian McCaffrey, and then on the wheel coming back, they'll get Nico Collins and somebody else. And you'll be like, yeah, I hate that guy, because it's the team I want.
Yeah, I mean, if you just look back to last year, the guys that were taken from 21st to, let's say, 30th overall, mm-hmm, were Garrett Wilson, Cooper Kupp. Obviously, he fell because of the injury late in the process. Jaylen Waddle, Chris Olave, Devontae Smith. Like, I think that if you just, obviously, we thought Garrett Wilson was going to be playing with Aaron Rodgers, but still, and I'm throwing Cooper Kupp out of the mix here just because he fell because of injuries. He was going much higher. But like Garrett Wilson, Jaylen Waddle, Chris Olave, Devontae Smith, like CJ Stroud is better than probably where we viewed all those quarterbacks. Again, Rodgers is a tough one to say, but like, he's as good, like, quarterback wise, he's set up as any of those guys, and he's as good as those players. Like, I think he's had a season that puts him in that group of player. Like, he's as good. His third season was definitely better than Jaylen Waddle's third season. I think maybe even better than Jaylen Waddle's second season. Like, Nico Collins is that good, and the quarterback play is going to be that good. So I don't really see what the question would be for him.
Totally agree.
All right. Well, hey, that is going to do it. We will preview. We'll preview the championship games more in depth. But Scott, any reaction? Just quick look ahead to these two games. I mean, how could you not be excited to see these games next Sunday? They're going to be pretty spicy.
Yep. Well, the Niners opened as a 7-point favorite. That's crept down to 6.5. I give Detroit a chance to beat anybody anywhere. Purdy will have to play better. And look, the Ravens, good draw. Houston, a team a year earlier than expected. Team ahead of schedule, but Baltimore is supposed to win this game. Now you get a big boy game against the Chiefs. You have to deal with the circus that is the Chiefs. Kelce looked like Kelce again, and very physical team. They're going to punch. The Ravens punch you in the mouth. The Chiefs are going to punch you in the mouth, too. It's going to be, I think, the best day of the NFL season will be. People talk about the divisional round being great, and it is. And a lot of times it is the best weekend of the season. Who knows? Maybe we'll look back on it. But I think this next Sunday is going to be the day we remember, because I think we're going to have two competitive games that come down to the fourth quarter. And I can't see a Super Bowl matchup I wouldn't be thrilled about. So it's bring it on, man. I'm thrilled. I'm pumped.
I am pumped. I cannot wait to watch both of those two games. I think we're in for a treat next Sunday. That is going to do it for today's show. Dalton Del Don, providing we have a good wellness check on him at some point. Poor Dalton. He's going to join me on Thursday to preview Championship Sunday. Until then, we're out.